Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hi, everyone. It's Anna. Since the election, we've been hearing from you. We asked you to answer the question, what's the thing you wish other Americans understood about you, but don't? Last night, I hosted a live call-in special on the radio, and you chimed in with your answers. It was a great conversation and really an honor to talk with you so honestly at such a raw time in our country. So we wanted to share the radio special with you over the podcast feed, too. Just a reminder, when you hear the phone number, this already happened, so you won't get me if you call in. But you can reach us anytime by emailing deathsexmoney@wnyc.org. This radio call-in special was in collaboration with an election series produced by my colleagues in the WNYC newsroom in New York. The series is called The United States of Anxiety. It's been really great and has covered how complicated and emotional this moment in America is right now. Look it up on iTunes or wherever you get your podcast. And have a great Thanksgiving holiday weekend. I'm thankful for you. It was so exciting to get to talk to some of you live on the radio. Here's our show. I'm Anna Sale, host of Death, Sex, and Money, the podcast from WNYC Studios. And for the next hour, we're going to be taking your calls specifically around one question. What do you want other Americans to understand about you that they don't? Our number is 212-433-WNYC, or you can tweet at WNYC or at Death, Sex, Money. Use the hashtag Other Americans. I want to get to as many calls as possible tonight, and I'm hoping that we'll hear from people across the country. We've already been asking our listeners on Death, Sex, and Money what they want other Americans to understand about them, and we heard from Kelly in Portland, Oregon. Hi, Kelly.
Hi, Anna. How are you?
Hi. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you. Thank you.
I understand you used to live in New York City?
Yes, I did. I was born and raised and moved to Portland in 2001.
In 2001. So it's been about 15 years.
Yes.
So from your vantage point, what do you want other Americans to understand that it feels right now that they just don't?
Well, one thing that I find myself frustrated about, especially listening to the news, no matter what I'm listening to, is how oversimplified everything is. And even when I hear other people interviewed, I find myself kind of screaming about how it seems like we're making complex matters way too simple. And we're not using our best selves in terms of just being empathetic and being curious and wanting, you know, dialogue.
What do you think? So wanting dialogue, wanting to hear more empathy. How did you feel when the election results came in? What was your most passionate emotion?
Oh, gosh. Well, it's interesting because I wasn't really pro-Hillary. I mean, I'm a black woman from New York City living in Portland, and so I have typically voted Democrat, but I wasn't a big fan of Hillary Clinton. But I really was not a big fan of Donald Trump. So I was struggling not with my choice, but I thought about not even voting, and I did, but it was shock. It really was shock because I just still thought that Hillary Clinton would win, and I could not possibly imagine Donald Trump being president. It's still shocking right now.
So, given what you know about what's happening in your community in Portland, Oregon, right now, as a black woman, what do you feel like is being left out of the conversation? What's missing?
Well, we've been talking here about how we're in a blue bubble, and so I guess what I feel is missing is that liberal smugness that was talked about, that is talked about on the right. I feel like people liberals in this town haven't been. I'll say that they're starting to, but I have felt like they haven't been really examining themselves. I like to.
They're not. They're smug and not self-aware about it, is what you're saying.
Exactly. Yeah. Sometimes I say Portland's a liberal town that hasn't really been tested because there's just not that much diversity here.
And what's that smugness like? What do you mean? Like you're walking around, you're having a conversation with someone. What is it that you've noticed that kind of grates on you?
That's a great question. It can be just a sense of rightness. This a lack, like I said earlier, lack of curiosity. And I mean, I get it. People want to feel smart, and but it's. I think there's so much affirmation here for one way of seeing that it can leave a sense that I'm not really being seen. Even though I have white friends who are wonderful, sometimes I feel like I'm not seen in who I am.
You're not seen. Sense? Is it particular to feeling that way as a black woman, or is it? Tell me more about that.
Oh, I think it is about being a black woman and coming from somewhere else, or even just like, for example, an example not even about me is about a lot of liberal white folks who will use the term white trash, which is a term I really struggle with, and not see anything wrong with that. And that's not, of course, that's not all of my friends, of course, but to me that speaks to a class divide that's not really acknowledged here.
Kelly, I want you to stay on the line, and I want to bring someone else into the conversation. Elijah from my home state of West Virginia. You there, Elijah?
Yes, I am, Anna. Thank you.
Hi, welcome to WNYC. I bet, do you have feelings about the term white trash? I have feelings about that term as a West Virginian.
I do, yeah. It's an uneducated point of view, in my opinion, yes.
Tell me, what do you feel like in this moment, post-election, what do you feel like other Americans aren't understanding about you that they wish they would?
Well, you know, I think just the stereotype, you know, from this state. I mean, if you were watching, of course, we all were, you know, the Republican Party carried every county in the state of West Virginia. It looks like there's not a lot of diversity here, and there's really not, you know, I mean, in the grand scheme of things. But there are, you know, there's certain pockets amongst this state and in this state that there are some diverse people, and I'm one of them. You know, I fall into the 18 to 35 demographic. You know, I come from probably an even smaller town than you do. I mean, 99.9% white population, you know, second and third generation coal miner families, you know, were most of my friends and family. So, you know, everybody just assumes, I think, that I think a certain way. But, you know, I'm a bit more cultured and open-minded. And so, you know how it is, Anna, when you travel and you tell people where you're from. I mean, sometimes you get a, you know, you almost get a reaction from them, and you kind of think, well, hey, man, you know, what was that about? You know what I mean? You don't know me. So, you know, I think my initial reaction, you know, would be that. Just don't judge a book by its cover. You know, I'd just like to think of myself as more of a free thinker and a little bit more culturally diverse, not defined by where I come from, I should say.
Who did you support in the election, Elijah?
You know what? I actually supported Gary Johnson, as a matter of fact. You know, I'd followed this election probably more closely, I'll admit. I think what a lot of people did. I think this, I don't know the statistics, but I think it was probably the highest rated presidential debates overall. And I actually voted for Johnson. You know, both Trump and Hillary had some points of view that I agreed on, and they both had some that I didn't. So I'll be honest with you, I was very torn. I was almost nervous going into the polls in this one. I was very undecided. But it was exciting, you know, it was exciting. I was glad to exercise my right to vote, and, you know, I encouraged everyone around me to do so as well. You know, I'll point out a quick statistic. Go ahead.
Well, I'm just kind of curious when you mentioned that all the counties in West Virginia went for Trump, and you feel like West Virginia is don't judge a book by its cover. And how do you understand, as someone living right now in Huntington, West Virginia, what is this? Why do you think the state went so much for Donald Trump? Why do you think it was so unanimous across the state that he was the better choice?
You know what, honestly, I think it really, you know, hinged on the coal industry. I think, you know, Trump came here, he put on a coal hat, and, you know, that's really all you have to do in some of these areas, you know, and I understand. I mean, like I said, I have close friends and family members that rely on the coal industry for their income and support their families. But, you know, as we know, I mean, I just don't think he's going to be able to bring coal jobs back here. I mean, I just don't think that it's efficient enough to mine it. I think natural gas is just taking over the market, you know, and these businesses are going to buy where they can get, you know, they're going to get their energy the cheapest. So, I think it had to do with coal, and I honestly do.
And Elijah, I want to bring Kelly back into the conversation, and this is something I have struggled with as a West Virginian, and is thinking about race in this election and wondering to what extent this has brought up, because of such the deep resentments that come from economic despair. I feel like in some places that has triggered a what has been an underground sense of racial resentment, and that has come up and it has exploded. And I just wonder, Elijah, talk with Kelly about how you feel like people are viewing Black people in West Virginia right now. I just want to hear you all kind of talk about that.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, there's.
Hi, Elijah.
Hey, Kelly. Nice to talk with you.
You too.
I think there's a divide. You know, there's a definite divide. It's really sad. You know what I mean? I feel like as a population, we're going backwards. I mean, I truly do. I feel like there's just such a line in the sand, and we had talked before, there's the others, you know, everyone's looking at the other side, and it's, you know, it's unfortunate. It is.
And Kelly, is there part of you that, you know, you've gotten your back up in the past when smug Portlanders, as you say, use terms like white trash? Is there part of you that after this election, you've looked at parts of the country that have struggled economically, that are predominantly white, that you're like, you know what, I'm feeling less for you. I'm feeling less for you right now.
No, actually, I feel, I mean, of course I'm triggered when I hear about, you know, the racism and the targeting of people of color, of course, but people struggling are people struggling. I mean, people of color have historically struggled, like Black folks. I come from, you know, a family, people who have struggled. And so, there's a part of me that understands, where that anger and frustration comes from. I mean, I'm afraid though. I'm afraid of being the target of that anger and, frustration, you know, but
like, are you really feeling that? Are you feeling that in like, are you feeling that physical threat? Like, are you fearing that right now?
I am. I am, actually. Certainly not as much as people living in other parts of the country. But I do get that, especially when I see, I'll be honest, white men who appear to be working class or poor. Often when I'm walking near them, I get afraid, and it's because I'm afraid that I'll be a target, you know, of their anger. It seems that however misguided it is, when a lot of white people struggle, they look at people of color and they have this idea that we're doing better than them, you know.
And Elijah, do you want to add anything to what Kelly just said?
Yeah, I mean, she's definitely spot on. I mean, and I think, like you said, those men that she refers to, if you look, actually, I mean, I really think that it's those people, it's that demographic that carried Trump in this election. You know, I mean, I heard a stat, you know, a couple of months ago that 80% of his supporters were non-college educated people. Mm-hmm. And I really think that what really threw the pollsters off is Trump appealed to that certain demographic, you know, that lower to middle class working class, you know, white male demographic thought, hey, man, you know, we can relate with this guy and we're going to go vote. If you look back in 2012, West Virginia, my state, was the last in voter turnout, the worst voter turnout out of the entire country. I mean, you're talking in the 18 to 24-year-old range, we had 23%. So only 22% of 18 to 24-year-olds voted in 2012. Now, this year, I feel like Trump was kind of a man's man, and they thought, hey, I'm going to, you know, I can relate to this guy. And so they came out and they voted for the first time. You know, we actually, you know, our state was up, you know, 5-6%. We actually set a record for early vote. We had like, you know, over 200,000 early votes. So it almost was like people were eager to vote this time, you know, versus 2012. Yeah, they were fired up. You know, they wanted to get out there and make America great again, so to speak. So, you know, that demographic, I think this election almost it awoke a racial tension in people that I think wasn't even there before. You know what I mean? And like I said, it's unfortunate, though. You know, it really is. I mean, it's predominant here where I'm at. I mean, like you said, we're not a very culturally diverse state to begin with. So I think the minorities here feel probably even more threatened. And I think that that threat was perpetuated by a lot of this election coverage, media and whatnot, and just all the hoopla on social media and so forth. So,
well, Elijah, I want to thank you for calling in, and Kelly too. Thank you so much for starting us going on a good path for the hour. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thank you. And we're going to get to some other callers. I want to hear from David in Millstone, New Jersey. David, what's something you want other Americans to understand about you that they don't?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My family came here as Jewish refugees, and I'm first-generation American, and I was raised in Brooklyn, and the community that I grew up in, we were a Russian community, and I didn't speak English till I was five and went to public school there. So I feel like I've always occupied this weird kind of liminal space between being American, being read as a regular American, as a regular white American, and not really fully getting it, and constantly being put into social situations that are culturally informed or informed by different power dynamics that I'm not necessarily, that don't come.
You don't know what's going on. Yeah. Yeah. How is that, like, does that, have you felt that more after the election at all? Like, what are you feeling in these weeks after the election results came in?
Well, I was devastated. I'm scared. I was scared for a lot of my friends, scared for myself. I'm queer, and it's just a lot of uncertainty in the air. And I think,
what are you afraid of right now?
All the swastikas popping up in New York, and all my friends who are people of color, who are under, like, such direct threat right now. But I listened to that speech that that alt-right person gave, and I actually wore my kippah for the first time today in my adult life.
Really?
Because I was like, yeah, it was a strange moment. But
you wanted to be visually identified as Jewish. You wanted to sort of...
It made me afraid to hear, and then I decided that I wasn't going to let those people in that room control who I am.
David, thank you so much for calling. I appreciate your story. This is the United States of Anxiety Call-In Hour, live from WNYC. I'm Anna Sale, host of the WNYC podcast Death, Sex, and Money. If you're just joining us, we're taking your calls with your answers to the question, what do you wish other Americans understood about you that they don't? Our number is 212-433-9692, 212-433-WNYC. Or you can tweet us at WNYC or at Death, Sex, Money. We are filling up. I want to hear from Gabriella in Austin, Texas. Gabriella, what do you wish other Americans understood about you that they don't?
Hi. I feel like I think it's just the feeling of constantly just being scared, just like David was saying. You know, I'm originally from Puerto Rico, and I lived on the East Coast for a while and have a lot of international friends and grew up surrounded by very diverse cultures and diverse people. And I moved to Austin, which is a blue dot in a red state, but it's still very much driven by this really white conservative thought process. And it was hard, especially the day after, to just even walk into my office, and just, I was terrified of just speaking up and showing how I felt and really expressing myself. And because I don't know how people here are going to react, and walking down the street and hearing my friends and or just people in my community being yelled back to go to Mexico and stuff like that, when it's like, I'm an American citizen. I'm a part of the United States. Like, I've always been part of the United States. So is my family. So it's just a really terrifying moment right now. And it's just been manifested so much because of this election, that it's just like, it's like you knew it was always there, and now it's really alive and burning, and it's terrifying.
You said you felt anxious at work because you didn't know how people were feeling. Have you had conversations at work since the election?
I did, and thankfully I work with a great group of people that are very open-minded and come from a lot of different backgrounds, even though most of my office is white and Christian and conservative. But I was able to express not only how sad I was and devastated, but how I also was scared, because I am Hispanic. I do not look white. I do look like, I don't look like I am from this country. And it was good to feel protected.
I just want to correct you there. Like you look like you're from this country if you're not white. That's not a defining characteristic of how you look like you're from this country.
Yeah. everyone thinks, I know, and it's not a defining.
I think that speaks to how you're feeling. Yeah, I think that speaks to how you're feeling right now in this moment. Gabriella, thank you so much for calling in. Right now, we're taking your calls about what you wish other Americans understood about you, but don't. We've been asking this question to our listeners on the podcast Death, Sex, and Money since the election. Here's just a little bit of what we've heard.
I just want Americans to know that I'm not the stereotype that has been cooked up for me. The amount of melanin in my skin doesn't define who I am. I just wish that I could be seen as the person that I am and not what people think I represent.
Every time I hear, "Where are you from?" in my head, there's this voice and says, "You don't belong here."
I would like other Americans to know that not everyone who grows up in the Rust Belt or from a so-called white trash family, we're not a monolithic group of people, and we don't all think alike.
What I wish other Americans understood about me is that I just don't want to talk about this stuff anymore. In the end, none of this is going to help with the problems in my life.
I'm a transgender man in my mid-30s. I'm a lawyer who grew up lower middle class. I've worked very hard for who I am and what I am, and I want to be able to continue to work hard and pay my taxes.
I wish other people understood that, yes, I'm an upper middle class white woman who happens to be a Republican, but it doesn't mean that I'm a racist or a bigot or that I want to move our country back 100 years or that I don't believe women have rights. It just means that I see things a little differently than they do, and I wish that they understood that.
I want to bring into the conversation that listener named Catherine. And Catherine, it sounded to me like in that moment when you recorded the message for us, you were feeling pretty defensive. Would you say that's accurate?
Hi, Anna. Yeah, I would say that also, like just a little hesitant about being open with people. I feel like in more recent times, the connotations that people have with people who are of conservative political views are just not necessarily the best connotations with some understanding as to where some of that's coming from. I just feel like, you know, you hear the R word, Republican, and sometimes people assume things about you that aren't necessarily true. And that's
so
where
you
I
voted for Donald Trump? You voted
I
for Donald
not.
Trump? You did not.
I did not.
But you identify as a Republican.
Not. Yes, I do.
And how long have you been a Republican?
Oh, my, for as long as I can remember. And it's more so economical than anything else, you know. But regardless, I feel like, you know, there should be a certain level of tolerance for the fact that other people may not believe what you believe. And, you know, if I respect you, I would hope that you would respect me.
And who did you vote for?
I voted for Gary Johnson.
Tell me about that choice. What was it about Donald Trump that repelled you?
He represents a lot of what I've been accused of being because I am a Republican, and that disgusts me because I have no reason to hate someone because of, you know, the color of their skin or their sexual orientation. And the Republicans were the party of Abraham Lincoln and the Civil Rights Act. And what it's become in, you know, in a way is kind of embarrassing.
Do you think you're going to continue to self-identify as a Republican when Donald Trump becomes president?
I'm questioning that. I'm more and more, you know, I talk to my younger family members who are my age, and we talk about, you know, having similar views, but not wanting to identify because, one, it's, like I said, it kind of goes back to that embarrassment that that's not what I necessarily want to connect myself with, but also, two, not wanting to hear that, you know, I'm somehow bigoted or somehow racist because I believe in certain economic strategies.
Hmm. I want to bring on to our conversation Bennett from Utah. Are you there, Bennett?
Yes. Hi, Anna.
Hi, Bennett. You also got in touch with Death, Sex, and Money. Tell me, what did you want other Americans to understand that they don't?
Well, what I want people to understand, you know, especially after the election, is kind of how lonely it can be for a lot of, you know, minority groups when we don't see ourselves represented well in leadership, in politics in particular, and in a lot of media. And then to, like, face an election like we did, it just kind of brought that home, hit that closer to home. And it's something that I think a lot of people can relate to, whether you're in a minority group or not. And that's something I've been learning since the election. So
do you, how do you feel about Republicans right now, Bennett?
Well, so I'm 25 years old, and I'm gay and I'm mixed race. So, you know, in my lifetime, I've never felt that the Republican Party was a place where I could be accepted, you know, a place that welcomed me or like my friends. Since this election, I have realized that kind of a lot of my feelings of being left out and not being represented well, I understand now that's a lot of Trump's, like, voting base, right? That was a lot of his first-time voters, and something that a lot of people didn't expect. So while I may have my issues with that party, I am now seeing there are some similarities, and obviously for very different kind of cultural reasons, but still at the core, there's a similar message there.
Have you felt angry after the election, Bennett?
I have, and one thing that, you know, has bothered me is watching, like, the results come in on election night. It was similar to the way I felt on June 12th or June 13th, the day after the Orlando shooting. You know, it felt kind of like such a cultural attack, something that, like, really invalidated people that I relate to, that I connect with and see myself as. It felt like we just weren't heard yet again or cared
for. Catherine, do you want to say anything to Bennett about
the part of the Republican Party that you feel like you belong in, since he's felt so rejected by it? He said his whole 25 years.
Oh. Wow. I feel like I obviously cannot directly relate to the loneliness that you felt. And in a certain sense, like, I sort of understand the loneliness now, being kind of caught in this middle. But I think that it's a place that has, thank goodness, become increasingly more welcoming of different people, and that I hope that it can get back to, as I said, what it was before, as opposed to what it's become. And that, you know, I think that younger people, I'm hoping that younger people like myself are, you know, including those who feel that they might not necessarily have been included before. And I just, my biggest hope is for some unity and some mutual understanding. And I hope that that's something we can, you know, symbolically offer each other.
Oh, absolutely. I would love to see that too.
Bennett and Catherine, thank you so much for calling in. I appreciate it. I want to bring in Michael from Vernon, New Jersey. Hi, Michael.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for taking
my call. I'm good. Thanks for calling in. What do you wish other Americans understood about you that they don't?
Me, personally, I would think that, and I haven't heard a lot of it, I don't know, there may have been talks about it, but I'm a second-generation union carpenter. I haven't heard too much talk about it, but Donald Trump has come out multiple times saying that he is more for a right-to-work state all over the country, which means less work for the unions. And what most people don't understand is unions set the precedent for the wages across the country. And if this all happens, it could go real south very quickly. And just looking for some understanding from somebody else, you know, I haven't heard too much about it.
Yeah, you're feeling kind of personally targeted economically.
Yes, well, I'm 24 years old. I'm part of the, you know, air quotations, white working class that is the talk of town these days. And I'm a hard worker. I like to, you know, think I am at least. But most people have been taking the white working class to be an uneducated, ignorant, scumbag, racist people, essentially. And we are not all of us. I mean, me personally, I'm very open. I'm very liberal in my views as far as, you know, the economy and whatnot.
From your point of view as a union carpenter, you're looking at Donald Trump and worrying that he's not actually going to be for the working man if he comes after your union.
Yes, exactly. He has said a bunch of things saying he's going to help this country get back to where it needs to be, but I don't feel that he's going to be right for the unions, which in part is not going to be right for this whole country.
And Michael, I just want to ask you, if I'm a non-union carpenter hearing what you say, and I'm thinking, Michael gets paid a whole heck of a lot more than I do, and he's complaining about the unions losing some of their ground. I need some of that ground. Like, how do you respond to that?
I'll respond to it in the same way I respond to anybody who seems to have a complaint. Unions set the precedent for the wages. So if our wages drop, then the non-union carpenters' wages are going to drop. The work will start disappearing. It'll start getting sent out to, illegals, or any type of person that is willing to do the work for less will take the work away, and the wages will drop.
And I notice you use the word illegals. Is that the word you use for undocumented people usually?
No, ma'am. It's just there are undocumented immigrants in the country, and they are taking work, but not to the extent that some people make it out to be. I'm not saying as a union carpenter that they're taking everything I know, because most of the jobs I've been on in my life have been all union people. It's been a very good job, and it gets done. But for the people who are non-union and those who have their own businesses and whatnot, including immigrants, it could set the bar for lower wages all across the country.
Michael, I want to thank you for calling in. We are taking your calls this hour about what you wish other Americans understood about you that they don't. Our number is 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. We'll continue this conversation in just a minute. It's the United States of Anxiety post-election call-in series live from WNYC. I'm Anna Sale, host of Death, Sex, and Money, the podcast from WNYC Studios. And right now, we're taking your calls about what you wish other Americans understood about you, but don't. The phone number is 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. I want to bring in Heather in Brooklyn. Hi, Heather. What do you wish other Americans understood about you that they don't?
Yeah, hi, Anna. I just think there's so many stereotypes happening right now, almost like tenfold before this election. And I think about myself, and I'm a native New Yorker. I have a successful job. I'm, you know, university, master's degree educated, but I grew up in public housing. I'm like one of five children, and my parents were working class folks, you know, white, but, you know, European descent. And we struggled. We really struggled. But education was important. Working hard was important. I kind of worked ever since I was 16 years old. And I just think, you know, I live in Brooklyn now. I think people are painting these really broad brush strokes. I'm a liberal Democrat in a lot of people's eyes, probably. But like, first and foremost, I'm a female. I'm a mother. You know, I'm a wife. I'm a sister. And I think that female identity for me is just surpasses everything else. You know, any other political brushstroke that somebody will want to paint on me or for me. You know, I'm a Democrat. I've always voted Democrat, but I, you know, come from a household where my mom was a Reagan Republican. But again, like, first and foremost, she was a female. And I just feel like this election, there was just no contest at all. If you identify as somebody that believes in rights for women, reproductive rights, fair wage rights, and all that. So I guess that's
what
I'm
thinking. Do you feel like you're a... Yeah, so you're a white woman living in Brooklyn, so you sort of look like what, for a voter who lives far away from one of the coasts, might think of as one of the, you know, the coastal elites. You've got a master's degree, you've got a graduate degree, but you grew up in public housing. Like, do you feel like you're part of kind of the, you know, the coastal elite?
No. I mean, I definitely don't. I, you know, again, I think I could be painted that way. But interestingly, I mean, when I was growing up, people thought I was Puerto Rican. So, cause my father's of Italian descent, and I'm married now to a Mexican. And, you know, so we have a daughter who's, you know, multiracial, I guess, you know, identifies as half Mexican. And, so, no, I, you know, again, like, just, this is again, a broad brushstroke, but, people almost growing up thought I was kind of non-white. They thought I was more Hispanic, you know? But that's just physical, right? So you can paint a brushstroke on somebody just kind of from their physical traits. But then they open their mouths. And I think that's where you have to listen to people. I hope we're going to listen to each other. You know, I'm very,
what
sort
do you
of,
feel
yeah.
For you, I'm just curious, like, in the, you know, the post-election chatter that we've all been a part of, do you, what about being a woman? Being a woman, you have a daughter. Like, what do you think about being a woman in America right now? Do you want to just underscore about what you're thinking about and what you're concerned about?
Yeah, I think there's a lot at risk. I really do. I almost want to, you know, I love that your show is talking about we should be talking to each other. And I almost want to talk to Ivanka Trump, you know, in some weird way. That's maybe not so weird, but I just feel like women's rights, the rights of children, the rights of working parents, male and female, reproductive rights, like, that's all under attack.
If Ivanka is tuning in right now on 93.9 FM in New York, what would you just, like, want the sentence that you want Ivanka, like, to think about as she's going to sleep tonight? What would you want her to think about?
Oh, boy. I'd want her to explain to me how what is coming out of her father's mouth is something that she could get behind. as a mother, as a daughter, as a wife, as a woman who converted to Judaism for her husband. I just want her to explain the rhetoric and the hatred that's coming out of her father's mouth and to either refute it or explain it in some way that I could understand it. I think that's what I'd want her to, you know, that's what I want to say to her and what I would want to hear from her.
Heather, thank you so much for calling in. I want to bring Jorge in Manhattan into the conversation. Jorge, what do you wish other Americans understood about you that you feel like they don't?
Hi, good evening. I'd first like to say I love the entire series. Anybody who's willing to listen, I recommend hearing it. So I applaud yourself good. And everybody put it together for putting such a great product out.
Well, thanks, Jorge. What did you want to add?
So I am a first-generation Latino, and, you know, within my family and friend circle, there are a lot of different opinions regarding this election and regarding political leanings. And all I've heard from people and from the media is how, you know, the Latinos are all liberal or Democrats. I'm personally identify myself as a progressive, you know, growing up, kind of had the American dream. I saw it before my eyes. Grew up in a small apartment in New Jersey, and by the time I was in high school, was able to move out to the suburbs. Got an education, bachelor's and a master's degree. But I do see the different tones. So I have, like, for example, my brother is a registered Republican. He really identifies himself with that. And I have other friends as well who are more right-leaning. And I think that within the Latino demographic, there's a lot of national identities. There's a lot of racial identity. There's a lot of economic identity that, and to echo the other caller, that are being painted with a broad brush.
Yeah, we have these blunt tools of exit polls, and as a result, we talk about all Hispanics as if they are one monolith. I wonder if you has it been difficult to talk with your brother who identifies as a Republican? You identify as a progressive, or has it been? Do you love your brother, and you feel like he's coming from a place of you know, rigorous analysis? Has it been tough, or do you understand where he's coming from?
It was very tough in the past. He is very staunch on the on self. What would you call it? I would call it more of you know, picking yourself up from the bootstraps, and you know, nothing is handed to you. He kind of has that mentality. But I would have to say that I still love him. But this election, actually, to my surprise, he voted for Hillary. He's the only Republican in the family that switched. My uncle still voted for Trump, but very much a Republican. And his argument is a bit different. You know, he argues that he came to this country, followed all the rules, had to wait to get his citizenship, had to take all the classes. And his view is it's unfair that some people from Mexico come in and come illegally and kind of force their way in. And that's his opinion. I don't agree with it. I think there's a lot more to it than that. But, you know, I have friends as well who are, for example, Puerto Rican. And Puerto Ricans, by birth, are United States citizens. And a lot of my Puerto Rican friends, well, not a lot, I would say a decent amount, lean to the right, and they have a very similar argument.
Well, Jorge, it sounds like you're going to have a very exciting, popping Thanksgiving conversation with your family and friends. Thank you. Thank you so much for calling it. Best of luck to you over Turkey Day.
Thank you.
I want to bring in Sophia in Hawaii, who's giving us a call. Hi, Sophia.
Hi, Anna.
Hi. What do you wish other Americans understood about you that they don't?
So I am half Pakistani and half Irish German. My dad immigrated to the United States from Pakistan when he was in his 20s for college, and he married my mom, who's from upstate New York, and obviously I'm an American. My dad became an American citizen after my parents got married, and my grandparents and my aunt and uncle also all immigrated to the U.S., and they're all U.S. citizens, and my cousins. I don't look like someone who has an entire Muslim Pakistani immigrant family, and I don't live near them, and so I don't identify as Muslim myself. I'm a Christian, and I go to church, and I live in Hawaii, which is not where my family lives. A lot of times I get brought into conversations or people bring things up about immigrants or specifically Muslim immigrants. And they say things with an assumption that I would agree with them, you know, along the lines of these people shouldn't be here or they're generally a bad thing. And obviously I don't feel that way. That's my family.
Yeah, you said, you wrote in an email to us that you sometimes fantasize about getting your maiden name tattooed on your arm or constantly wearing a picture of your extended family around your neck so people would know. I mean, do you find in a situation where someone is saying something about Muslims and for you that's half of your family, what do you do socially?
I have no idea. I have not been able to come up with a good answer to this, and it has become like more and more of a problem in my life over the last couple of years. And obviously this election and the type of language that I think is more normalized about immigrants and specifically Muslims and ISIS and all these things. And I don't have a good answer. Like I try to be a really reasoned person and I'm not super political. But, you know, I can't sit and defend every surah of the Quran line by line. Like, I don't know enough about that. I know about my family. And there's a lot of times that I just want to scream and yell about things that are said, and it doesn't do any good. Like, it doesn't make anybody look good. And then I can't, like, I don't have a tit-for-tat answer, you know, like,
you're still working on your talking points.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to bring Alex into the conversation. She is also in Hawaii. Hi, Alex.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, good. I'm not sure if you all are close to each other on the islands, but Alex, what did you want to add to the conversation? You're on the Big Island, and where are you?
I am
too. Sophia? Oh, cool.
Oh, I'm on the Big Island.
Maybe you can...
I'm in Kauai.
Alex, what do you wish other Americans understood about you that they don't?
Well, the first thing I want to let you know is the Kelly that you spoke to earlier is actually my niece, so it was very interesting to hear her speak.
Oh, family!
Yeah, very
small
weird.
World.
Very weird. I know your time is limited. So my thoughts as I was watching everything unfold was, honestly, now a lot of white Americans understand how black people feel all the time, especially in light of everything that's been going on with the police shootings. How can this happen? How can this occur? This isn't right. You know, watching everything unfold with Donald Trump over the past 18 months and longer, you know, for the first several months, I kept thinking, oh, this isn't going to happen. This isn't going to happen. And as I watched him get bigger and bigger crowds, I just really realized that, you know, this country, as much as a lot of people thought because we had an African-American president, we've moved beyond race, and we really haven't. And just like Kelly said, I'm also scared. I'm in Hawaii, so I'm not in the same kind of populace, but I'm scared for my family. I'm scared for my nephew. I'm scared for, you know, walking down the street and when I go back to the mainland, because it feels that a lot of the Trump supporters now have a license to do what they want. And it doesn't feel like there's any protection. It doesn't feel like whatever safeguards that we used to feel that we had, it feels like they're all completely gone, because this man does not operate by any rules, and the people who support him are blinded to anything that he says and does that just makes absolutely no sense.
Alex, and your point about that feeling of living in a country where you're not sure you belong, that's a feeling that black people have felt a very long time.
Oh, that
is
we feel
a good
all
point
the time.
To reflect
on. I mean, I am a professional right now. I'm working, I have my own companies. But, you know, sitting around the board table, walking down, I'm actually from New York City originally. So I completely understand what Kelly again said, being a black woman in the big city and feeling ignored and overlooked and having stereotypes, you know, just thrust upon you based on nothing. So it just feels like for me that a lot of white people, for lack of a better word, are just kind of understanding what we feel, where we don't feel that this is our country. This isn't representative of who we are as human beings, the families that we interact with, the values that we have. It just is, it's just at odds. And I actually was talking to my mother, she's 84, and I was saying, you know, I guess this is kind of what she had to live through with Jim Crow and the civil rights and watching everything unfold and the African-American leaders that were murdered, having to live through all that and go, oh my God, I am an American, but people don't want to see me that way. And I don't know what's going to change and when it will. And I feel
Alex,
that
thank
now.
You. You feel that way now. Alex, thank you for calling in. And Sophia, thank you for calling in from Hawaii. I hope you all run into each other on the Big Island. I want to bring in now a caller who prefers we don't use her real name. We're going to call her Nora. She wrote into Death, Sex, and Money and told us that she works on Capitol Hill as a Republican staffer, but she voted for Hillary Clinton. Nora, which is what we're calling you, what is the thing that you wish other Americans understood about you that they don't?
Hey there, Anna.
Hi.
It's been a crazy last couple of weeks. You know, like you said, I didn't support Donald Trump at any level of the primary process, the general election. You know, it really wasn't until the early hours of the 9th of November that I really, you know, it just hit me that, you know, my party, the Republican Party, had a mandate to govern. And it wasn't how I envisioned it happening. It, you know, I would never have bet on, you know, things turning out the way they did. But, you know, there are so many people like me who, you know, I'm a Republican staffer. I've always been a Republican staffer. But there are so many people on Capitol Hill that, you know, are really going to take this opportunity and do the country proud. It's not how we envision getting the mandate, but, you know, we are simultaneously terrified of sort of the uncharted unknown, but also really excited to finally have a chance, the first chance in 8 years, to be able to kind of do what we sort of envision for the country. And, you know, as a Hillary Clinton voter, I just was so surprised at how things shook out. But there are so many people like me that
voted for her
because of her inclusive message and, you know, the things that she preached. And we're still the ones that are sort of behind the scenes, and we are not going anywhere.
Do you feel ambivalent at all about the person who you wanted to be president lost? Donald Trump is going to become president, and it means professional opportunity for you as a Republican in Washington.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that was, I think, the biggest shock. You know, when I voted for Hillary Clinton, you know, it was under the assumption that everybody else had, you know, Hillary Clinton was going to win, the Democrats were going to take over the Senate, and that means in D.C., you know, the number of jobs in the executive agencies, but also in the Senate and the House, you know, it directly is proportional to the party in power. So when I voted for Hillary, I did it completely against my own career interests, which is, you know, it was really hard to make peace with that. And it was upsetting, but I just couldn't, you know, I thought about voting third party. And when it came down to it, I just could not support this man who didn't represent so much of the things that I'm proud of. But yeah, I mean, we're going into a big season of the Trump administration is going to be staffing up and are going to be taking people like me, young Republicans and young millennial Republicans. And those are the people that are going to be part of this new administration.
Do you feel at all like maybe this is a party that you don't want to work for anymore?
You know, my husband asks me that question every day. I don't know. I think that I'll know it when I see it. And until then, you know, I've given my whole career. This is the only career I've ever wanted, was to serve, to be in D.C., and to help people at home. And I think that that's something, you know, my identity as a Republican is much more than who I vote for, you know, once a year. It's something that I live and breathe every day. It's part of my identity, and down to my core, it's just a huge part of who I am. And it's very hard to give up something that takes up so much of my time and my energy, you know, not just as an American voter, but as someone who's very dedicated to their career.
Nora, I want you to stay on the line, and I want to bring Mark in as our final guest. Hi, Mark.
Hey there. How are you, Anna?
Hi, good. What do you wish other Americans understood about you that they don't?
Well, I'm 51 years old. I'm a white male. I'm gay. I grew up in Savannah, Georgia. And I think, for me, I memoed you about silence. I think I absorbed an intense amount of homophobia to the point where, I mean, I think when you talk about me and being silent, I'm a big talker and people would laugh at that, but I have absorbed a lot of quietude about who I am. So when I go home or when I'm around my partner or my partner's relatives, I'm very, very silent about who I am. And when Trump got elected, I was in so much denial, and it was so depressing. I went into a deep depression for a couple of days, and I woke up from that. And what I woke up to realize, it was like Thelma said in Thelma and Louise, I feel awake. I feel very awake, and I don't feel frightened because I feel awake.
I want to ask Mark, is there something you want to tell Nora if she takes a job with the new Republican administration, what you want her to think about?
You know what? I'm so glad that Nora. Hey, Nora, by the way. I'm so glad that she was.
It's got to be quick, Mark. We're running out of time. You just got one sentence.
I'm glad she was on the line because I think she's already on the way. I think she feels the same way.
We're going to have to wrap it there. Nora and Mark, thank you so much for calling in. I want to say thanks to all of you who have called in and shared your thoughts tonight. I hope that you will keep this conversation going. I'm Anna Sale. Thank you and good night. That was our show. Thanks to so many of you for joining in. You know the thing I wish other Americans understood about me, but don't? That I miss my home in West Virginia. But moving to other cities has made me reimagine over and over again what's possible in my life. I wish other Americans understood how grating the self-satisfied insularity of Brooklyn and Berkeley can be, and how dangerous the casual hatefulness of some Trump supporters is. I wish other Americans understood how alarming it is to notice that both where I live and where I grew up seem to be driven now by the question, how can I get mine? But actually, I think a lot of other Americans do understand this. I think that's why so many of us are feeling rattled right now. This is not familiar territory. It is unmooring. The only thing that's grounding is hearing how the rest of you are making sense of this and figuring out how you want to go forward. So thank you for sharing. Death, Sex, and Money is a listener-supported production of WNYC Studios in New York. I'm based at the Center for Investigative Reporting in Emeryville, California. Thanks to Destry Sibley and the radio station KQED in San Francisco for all of their help during this live broadcast. The Death, Sex, and Money team includes Katie Bishop, Chester Jesus Soria, Emily Botine, and Andrew Dunn. Our interns are Ali Lesperance and Rich Rinalik. The Reverend John DeLure and Steve Lewis wrote our theme music. I'm on Twitter at Anna Sale. The show is at Death, Sex, Money. And if you want to find out more about the United States of Anxiety series, visit wnyc.org/anxiety. I'm Anna Sale, and this is Death, Sex, and Money from WNYC.